Climate Fund questions and Queensland's racist place names. Hello, I'm Stephen Clark with the latest from NIRS News. Pacific Island nations are calling on Australia and other developed nations to contribute to a new climate support fund. The new fund is being established to help poorer nations deal with the impacts of climate change. Australia is absent from a list of 18 countries who have pledged money to the $990 million fund. Dr. Sindra Sharma is a policy advisor with the Pacific Islands Climate Action Forum. She's told SBS a lot is at stake if poorer nations aren't supported.
We talk about this climate crisis as if it's something in the future, but it's something that's happening right now, and it's going to extinguish whole cultures and whole identities. And that's something that I personally can't just sit around and let that happen.
Racist and derogatory place names in Queensland must be immediately changed, Indigenous Darren Blelder says. The Queensland government has identified 43 place names with racist slurs and has recently amended legislation so racist place names can be changed without broad community consultation. Since 2017, 6 place names have been changed at the request of traditional owners. Queensland's Department of Resources say the process to change the names is underway, but will take time. There are calls for an investigation after a fracking company failed to report a find of ancient Indigenous stone tools near one of its exploration wells in the Northern Territory's Beetaloo Basin. It's one of a series of compliance breaches reported by fracking company Empire Energy over the last 4 years, including a leaking wastewater storage tank, land clearing in Gouldian finch habitat, and over-extraction of groundwater. Ngadalinji traditional owner Kane O'Keefe told the ABC he was disappointed to learn the ancient tools had been relocated.
They've been stone head, axe head, and then about 100 metres from that, spearheads. It was so emotional. It took them that long to make a stonehead axe. Someone left them there maybe 60,000 years ago. Things can't be moved where they left.
Townsville Council has passed a unanimous motion of no confidence in its mayor, Troy Thompson. Thompson has come under fire in the last week after it emerged he had lied about his time spent in the Defence Force and about his education. The no confidence motion calls on the mayor to resign immediately. We'll have more after this.
Hey, you mob, it's Naomi Moran, proud Bundjalung woman and CEO of the Koori Mail, our 100% Aboriginal owned and operated newspaper. Since 1991, we've been a respected source of news and information for our people. Whether it's an important community event or a focus on issues that matter, we've got you covered. So subscribe today by visiting koorimail.com. The Koori Mail is proudly the voice of Indigenous Australia.
Program sponsor.
A 20-game veteran of Rugby League's State of Origin has predicted a Maroons win in the opening game in Sydney. Matt Gillette, a former Brisbane Broncos second rower and Australian representative, debuted for the Maroons in 2012 at the height of Queensland's dominance over New South Wales. He has told AAA Murray Country tonight's match will be close.
I think it's going to be tight, mate. I think with the teams have been picked, obviously Queensland, we back ourselves on the work ethic and always showing up for our mates, and I think New South Wales themselves have picked a similar side that will do that. And again, it's some new combinations for New South Wales, new coach, all new system for them. And again, for us, we play our style of footy. We're not worrying about what New South Wales are going to bring. They've had some changes. Tedesco's back in the side now, so he's out there to prove a point, which is quite dangerous for us. But obviously, Queensland with a win.
And Claude the Koala has become a viral sensation after footage emerged of the marsupial sneaking into a nursery to sample some eucalyptus seedlings. The footage of his repeated burglaries has garnered a lot of attention, but a wildlife expert says it points to a troubling reality.
With Koala Claude and his friends going to the nursery to eat seedlings, it shows how they're desperate for food trees. And this area that we are right now, the Northern Rivers, especially around Lismore, is heavily cleared. And it's really missing good quality habitat for them. And that shows how we need to plant more trees and how we need to stop urgently tree clearing, especially all around the Northern Rivers, that it's a stronghold for koala populations in New South Wales.
That was Maria Borges from WWF Australia. To stay up to date with NIRS News, follow us on Twitter or Instagram, like us on Facebook, and visit our website at nirs.org.au. And that's the latest national Indigenous news.
The National Indigenous Radio Service, the voices of our people.
Which way gambling? Big issue for us? When gambling takes over, it can affect all of your life. We may not know when we have crossed the line. We are a people that are strong in culture and family. Together, we can take back our power over gambling and strengthen our spirit. Search Gambling Help Queensland or give them a call on 1800 858 858 for tips and ideas about how to manage gambling. It's free and you can remain anonymous. Hear you, mob. Be brave and let's start yarning about gambling.
Authorised by the Queensland Government, Brisbane. Station sponsor.
You know, the flu can be passed around as easily as a footy can. But unlike a footy, when the flu's passed around, it can make some of us mob very sick and be really dangerous for everyone in our communities. That's why it's good for all us mob to get protected with a free flu vaccination. Talk to your health worker about getting vaccinated today or visit health.gov.au/flu. And let's give flu the boot. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
Station sponsor.
Hey, Bill and Gunner, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you, and thanks to the Yidinja broadcast for this program. Black Law Tribal Edition is the name of the program, and we go all around the world thanks to Bumma Bipra 98.7 FM. And of course, wherever you are listening to this show, we use the spectrum of the tribes there, and we say thank you very much for letting us our digital show travel on your country. And today joining me for the first part of the show is Kanyara, who is the Attorney General and the Minister for the Treasury of the Sovereign Yidinja Government. And we often talk about interesting things that happen around the place to do with sovereignty and encouraging Indigenous nations, let's say, to set up their institutions to help interact and create a bridge into the UN system, where they're not represented at this stage, but that's okay. That's what this show is all about. Kanyara, welcome to the show. Some interesting developments. Let's start off with the universities. The university around Australia are getting a bit of a flack at the moment. Obviously, they do a lot of good things, but some other things are being accused of racism and the old legacy way of doing things.
Yeah, look, sure is strange. Yeah, it's a good show to always to come and be part of and have a bit of a say from the Yidinji point of view. And, yeah, there was an interesting story recently in The Guardian. Denying history is simply lying. You know, what a strange way to title this. Australia is denying its past. It's trying to be the great one, yet it was a white Australia that was built to destroy the Aboriginal nations. You know, this was the world that Australia was going to take over and the Aboriginals were going to die out. You know, they made the soothing pillow to rest their head upon, you know, as they slowly die out. But meanwhile, they committed genocide against the Aboriginal nations. What a great lot. And the universities, they're just part of this, you know. They were part of the white Australia policy. They were part of the genocide. They were part of the murders, the body snatchers, the whole box and dice. So the universities quite obviously have their point of view. And I tell you what, a lot of them are really pushing the Australia agenda, you know, the white Australia agenda that, you know, that bad things didn't quite happen. In the truth-telling commission, you know, the Yurok Commission is really detailing some of the gory stuff that did happen that the universities are denying. No, we never saw it, you know. So lying is not telling the whole truth. The whole truth. Let's tell the whole truth of what happened here. Do the Australians know the whole truth of up in the tableland, Yidinji, for example? Bones Knob. Why would you call it Bones Knob? Because there was a big cliff there where they herded the Aboriginal people up, the Yidinji people, onto this big rocky cliff and said, jump or we shoot you over the edge. Did anyone say anything about that? Did any university record that and say to the students, say, oh, look, this is really what happened there. We committed genocide. We committed murders. Like Paul Keating said, he got the truth there. We done the murdering. And yet the universities don't put any of this into the white Australia policy. So the universities, by not telling the truth, by denying it, no, that we didn't see it happen. That is telling a lie. Tell the truth. Just be honest. Tell the truth. This is what's coming out of the Yurok Commission. Tell the truth. You know, like the police, the Victorian police, we're part of the gang that went out and perpetrated these crimes against the Indigenous people down there in what you want to call Victoria. You know, they're all the different mobs, but they want to call it Victoria. Well, these police that were formed in the 1800s had been part of... They were the arm that went out and shot the Aboriginal people. They were the arm that went out and incarcerated the Aboriginal people. They were the arm that went out and stole the kids from their families to try and get them, and especially if they had a little bit of white in them, to assimilate them into Australia. But what university is talking about this? Because there were all sorts of strange people here. There were the Nazi sympathisers. There were the body snatchers. Went out. What didn't we talk about one of the shows recently about one of these statues to a bloke down there? You know, in Tasmania, wherever it was. What was he part of? You know, that bloke. The statue got cut down on, the big bronze statue. This is what I mean. They went out, took things like skulls, Aboriginal skulls. You know. Do we go into the Whitefella Cemetery? Do we go into the ordinary cemetery and take out the Whitefella skull? No, we never ever done that because we had belief in the body itself. You know, we were trying to be nice to the people, yet they took all our people.
Yeah, it's unfortunately, it's a signature of colonialism the world over. And these things were very, very real to a lot of people listening to this program, including the Yidinji elders that had to travel overseas on Australian documents to pick up an ancestor from Germany, where some bloke had stolen it, the mummified remains of that elder, and then sold it to somewhere, and it ended up in Munich, to the point where the Munich Museum wrote to the foreign minister of the sovereign Yidinji government, inviting the minister to attend the actual repatriation. There was a bit of a... I think the Senator Lisa Waters, the Green Senator, wrote to Maurice Payne, the Minister for the Commonwealth at that time, the Foreign Affairs Minister, saying, look, you know, we should be supporting this Yidinji government minister to go over there and officially receive the body because it's Yidinji's body. It was never an Australian body because it was prior to anything to do with Australia. And, you know, these are the things that are going to come to the truth anyway. We talk about truth, but this is, concealment is a crime. And if you're going to conceal a little bit of the truth, then guess what? It's not the whole truth.
Well, this is how it works. You know, you just don't tell the average Australian what really happened, and you're right. That body, that old Yidinji ancestor, was repatriated by Australians. They should have been done by Yidinji people, you know, in their true and correct capacity, not as an Australian citizen. An Australian citizen has no right to go and touch that body. The man itself is not the identity. We remember this thing. The humans are not the identity. We are seen through the identity. And it was very important that someone seen through the Yidinji identity should have been there to bring the old fella home. Not the Australian. And, you know, I asked the question, where is the body now, you know? But why did it end up in Munich in the museum over there? Was this some sort of public display? You know, it was taken by a body snatcher. Call it for what it is. It was taken by a body snatcher, someone who had no right to touch the body. We don't go and do that to the Whitefella bodies. Do we do that to Australian bodies? No, we don't. And this is the important part. Yet it's okay for them to take the bodies of our people and sit them in museums and skulls and all the artefacts that are still held. By the way, there are many skulls in the museums around the world, not only in Munich. What about in the UK? What about all the other museums in the US? Are there any Aboriginal remains there? Is that nice to have our ancestors' remain jammed in a museum somewhere when it's not okay to have the ancestors of an Australian, of a white Australian, gemmed in the museum? You know, that's totally different. Unless it's donated, and the Yidinji bodies weren't donated, is it okay?
Yeah, I think people would have an absolute kitten over someone stealing an Anzac body, let's say from Turkey or wherever it is, and rightfully so. Like, you know, unless the family wanted them repatriated, obviously. But interfering with bodies, I mean, I've heard from an elder down south of one of their ancestors being used as an ashtray, their head. Mm-hmm. That is very disturbing. It really does paint the picture of what the foundation of Australia is, to the point where Laura Tingle, who is an ABC journalist, came out recently to actually sort of give a bit of attention to this particular matter, but then got shot down on flames for it. I mean, it's you know, this is, there are people in Australia who are starting to realise the severity of the foundation of the nation and how fragile it is, and it's laced in racism and greed.
Well, I like it that you brought up this matter with Laura. Laura Tingle, when she made the comment, she didn't say Australians. She said Australia is racist. Not the Australians. Australia is racist. And that's very important to understand what was said exactly, because Australia is built on the White Australia policy. You show me any document, any part of the Constitution that has been altered to get rid of the White Australia policy, they can say, oh, yeah, we've just sort of given up on it. But no, they haven't. It is still the White Australia policy. There's no ifs and no buts about it. Until they redraw that Constitution and get a treaty in place, until they sort out the coexisting sovereignties, it is built on the White Australia policy. So Laura Tingle, look, she copped a lot of flack over that. And, you know, I can see from who. You know, the main flack was coming from the far right, the Murdoch-based crew. You know, when you look at who owns Sky News, for example, and she was getting a lot of flack out of Sky News, it was a pile-on from Sky News against herself, you know. She needs education again, and, you know, she needs to be brought back into line, into the White Australia policy line, that is. You know, so she actually highlighted an issue that most Australians are unaware of. And, look, the majority of Australians are not racist. You know, majority of Australians are not of the White Australia belief, you know, that mentality. We are the supreme ones, we are the best, we are it. So everyone wants to get along together. Yidinji wants to get along with those people as well. But they've got to get rid of this idea of having some, I suppose, provocateurs on the sidelines stirring up the White Australia belief. You know, we got to go to march in the streets to protect Australia from the Aboriginal people, you know, all this sort of stuff. It is just not right. But Laura Tingle brought it to a head. She brought it to the attention of a lot of people, and a lot of people found it uncomfortable. And those who found it uncomfortable most were the white Australians who are of the white supremacist belief, you know, the far right. And that's because of the groups of people that have greatly benefited, by the way, from the Commonwealth of Australia, or from its resources of the Aboriginal people out of the Commonwealth of Australia. They were Aboriginal resources that the Commonwealth has stolen in the name of Australia and given to these people. So there are a lot of very wealthy people that have benefited. And they're the ones that bunged on the turn the most, you know.
Yeah, this is my if I have any things that disappoint me, it's one of these where a handful of Australians, of the elite, I don't know who they are, I have some ideas, but they're the ones also not only ripping off the tribes, but ripping off the average Aussie. Because, one, they're concealing truth, they're trying to keep things stitched up, the status quo, that is, without letting the cat out of the bag about, let's say, there's no treaty and all these things. So you just got to follow the money. With anything around the world, you follow the money and you'll find the answers. The Yidinji money is guilt-free. The sovereign Yidinji dollar is guilt-free. When we create our institutions of this government, our currency and our money is backed by the resources. It's not backed by someone's future generation children or someone's stolen gold. It's backed on Yidinji resources. Nothing more, nothing less. And that's is really important for us, because that's the foundation. Who is the foundation? The elders. The society, that the whole kinship system is like a big fig tree here, right? So this is the whole point, that a corrupt tree can only produce corrupt fruit. The Yidinji tree is the original tree. It is here to serve the nation. It is here to serve the members of the society, whether you're part of the Blue Fig Society or the Woodland Society or, you know, all the other ones. It's there to protect any man or woman that calls this place home.
Well, I'm just glad you mentioned the fig tree and the trees and all that, because recently down south in Tasmania, you know, what the Australians want to call Tasmania, there's a bloke, I think it's today, or no, it was earlier in the week, sorry, that he's refusing to turn up to the court, to an Australian court. And, you know, he's got an Australian name, Jim Everett, but he's an Indigenous man down there, and he got arrested in the old growth forest about logging. So he's having a bit of a go at him over that. He said, look, I'm not an Australian citizen. You know, I'm not an Aboriginal Australian, as he said there. But as an Aboriginal non-Australian citizen, he doesn't recognise the jurisdiction of the court, you know, of Tasmania, which I find it rather bizarre. You know, he's very smart with this. He's very right with it. Because Australia, and you know, there are numerous countries around the world that refuse to acknowledge the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court, you know, and that's the very problem with it all. But this bloke has got every right. And he said, look, it was in the Guardian newspaper a few days ago. He said, look, I'm ready for everything and I don't care. The man refusing to turn up to an Australian colonial court, good on him. I'll give him a big pat on the back, you know, and like he said, he's 80-odd. What's he got to lose? What have they taken? They've taken everything off him so far, off his mob. Everything's gone, and he's out there trying to protect the few trees left that haven't been logged.
Well, there's probably one thing that they, you know, that's left, and that's his soul, and that's the truth. So that's the only thing they can try and get now. And, you know, the law is there for a reason. And, you know, it's we often talk about not exceeding constitutional powers, because that's written in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 6, do not exceed the words or what is written. And that is very important. And, you know, I hope that all the nations listening to this particular program comprehend the issues that are at task here, because under the microscope, rather, because it's very important. Your law counts. Your law is the foundation. Your law is rooted in truth. And any other law, whether it be foreign, you know, or made up or whatever, that's, you know, it is what it is. So to understand the whole picture, the true sovereign ability is knowing the value of things and persons.
Absolutely, and this is the very issue there. Look, that old-growth forest is worth more than what money can buy. You know, these trees are hundreds upon hundreds of years old. They're not just some Johnny-come-lately tree that just popped up in the last 50 years, some softwood tree. They've been there for a long time, and they deserve to stay there for a long time. But to understand what this bloke's saying, he's an Aboriginal non-Australian citizen. He quite obviously understands the concept of legal identity, the personality, and that is so important, because under Australian law, he would be dragged into the court. But, okay, what? Hang on, it's a colonial court. It's a manifestation of colonialism. And doesn't Australia abide by the rule of law where the manifestation of colonialism is acting contrary to the Charter of the UN? What's the good of the UN and the Charter if one of the member states, like the Commonwealth of Australia, is a manifestation, is acting contrary to it? They don't believe in it. They don't believe in the ICC, quite obviously.
Well, I would hate to be the magistrate or the judge of that particular matter and being pressed upon such matters. I think, you know, and this is something that I would encourage people. How would and can we integrate international law, let's say into domestic law, if I was an Australian, to protect all the institutions and to tick off all those boxes? I think that is a very interesting journey, and to give the magistrate or whoever it is discretionary powers to actually adopt that into their consideration of the whatever matter comes forth, especially if it's coming with an Indigenous flavour, let's say. It gives them an out, I think. But anyway, that's something that, as an Attorney General, you'd find interesting.
Oh, my word. You know, I often look at the ICC stuff that's going on. A number of UN member states don't recognise the jurisdiction of the ICC. Why? Are they the ones committing crime? Are they the ones committing international crime, for example? And it's rather interesting, because recently there was an article in one of the papers, ABC actually, that where Peter Dutton was pressed about would they arrest Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, if he come to Australia. And he was given the out by John Howard. When John Howard, in his day as the Prime Minister, introduced the International Criminal Court legislation into Australia, they put an out option in there, you know, an option where you don't have to arrest someone, even though there's an arrest warrant for it. It's got to be the Attorney General has to issue the OK to issue an arrest warrant for that person, whoever it may be. And I'm not saying if it's Benjamin Netanyahu or anyone else, because there's arrest warrants out for Vladimir Putin, the Russian Prime Minister. The you know, then there's Benjamin Netanyahu, the arrest warrant for him, the Israeli, you know, it's all out there. So the president of Russia gets an arrest warrant against him, the Israeli prime minister gets an arrest warrant against him. Are we going to arrest any of them should they come to Australia? And it's up to the Attorney General now, one bloke, one department, to say yes or no. Now, you either are part of the International Criminal Court, just like this bloke is saying in Tasmania, I don't recognise the jurisdiction of your court. Where can you show me in my agreement to be an Australian citizen or to not be an Australian citizen that I've agreed to the jurisdiction of the colonial court, the one that's acting contrary to the Charter of the UN?
Yes, you're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today, thanks to the Yidinji Broadcast Service and our friends, by the way. Go and support them if you can. Bumabibra Media, 98.7 FM, one of the champions of Indigenous broadcasting. And we'll catch you after the break. We've got coming up, we've got Irigala Rajraj, the Minister at Law for the Waka Waka Nation.
Shine your lights, brighten up the world. so beautiful. Yes, you are like a star.
Come shine, shine, come shine.
Hey, Bill and Gunn, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today, and we have a wonderful guest. We've got Irigala Rajarajau, who is the Minister for Law from the Waka Waka Nation, and she joins me in the studio. We've had a number of guests come through in recent times to really look at asserting sovereignty for the tribes, and Irigala, you join us now, and thank you so much for coming to the Yidinji Territory. First of all, tell us about how did you get involved with this whole picture, because and where Waka Waka is and all those things, please inform us.
I'd love to, so I don't think you've heard this story either. My law experience started really in the 90s in Darwin. We're first with contract law, then I was elected to local government, so I studied constitutional law and comparative politics. Had some significant wins, but when I left Darwin, I had one regret, that I had never done anything to help the Indigenous people. I had never done anything to help the original people of Australia. So that's always been a wound with me. And then fast forward until 2020, when the world changed and things got crazy, we started a Stand in the Park group in Kingaroy, and that's where I met my friend Buddy. And he's the first Aboriginal person that I've ever talked to or made friends with. And then we started a common law group, which was a great learning experience. We went down all those rabbit holes. And then I heard about... we'd only known each other a couple of weeks, and he rang me up one day and invited me to coffee. So we met in Kingaroy, and within 5 minutes, he showed me the Yidinji website and explained to me what Yidinji people were doing in Cairns. And at that time, he was keen to have them come and talk to the people in Cherbourg. At that time, I think he was the chairman of the PBC of the Waka Waka. And in fact, he rang you and put me on the phone. So way back in 2022 or whatever it was. And so then I heard more about the sovereign nations, and I was immediately interested, because my focus has always been on finding solutions to the problems that we were having, and looking for alternative, to build alternative paths to get out of that. And so I never ever had to go looking for Buddy. I came out of the library one day, and there he was in front of me in the beginning of 2023. And he was very depressed, very low, full of grief. And I sat and spoke to him, and because their people were suffering after receiving the injections. And normally out at Cherbourg, they might have 6 funerals a year, and they had just suffered 9 funerals in a month. And he was beside himself with grief. And in addition to that, he felt an extra burden, because he felt like he had a lot of responsibility for that, like he hadn't done enough to stop them taking the medication and so on. And I said to him then, it was a bit of a pep talk actually, I said, you know, we have to get used to this, we have to get over this, because you and I have got a lot of work to do together. I knew then that, and we've been close ever since. And so I introduced him to the whole, what was happening with the sovereign nations. I remember that he was interested in Yidinji. And by October last year, the nation was formed with 3 elders and mapped out the territory. And there was initial appointment of ministers. Now, a lot of those things we've found we really want to change. We want to make changes to the constitution. So we're winding back the clock a little bit to have like a fresh start.
Yeah, and that's quite normal, I think, when you go through things and, like, even here, we went through a lot of changes from the very beginning. There were lots of consultations and then the tribal law created the tribal council, then the tribal council created the government, and now we're creating all these things. And there is a sense of injustice, not just in recent times, because this has been happening for a long time now. And I think that's what... the Waka Waka Nation, I would, without any problem of guessing, suffered the same, impacts of colonisation, for example, unjust enrichment, and just being the Waka Waka estate being, disrupted. But the good news is that it's coming back, and that's good news for everyone, not just the Waka Waka.
Absolutely, because there are several things I love, because Cherbourg added to all of the other traumas which all original people suffered. They had like 40 tribes all put in there together, which caused a lot of friction and still does today. So there's a lot of division in the PBC and those sorts of bodies. But I knew strongly that Buddy wanted this for his people. And as you said, not just for his people, but they always knew that it was a case of black and white. This is the time we have to join together, basically to protect the land, the air and the water for the future generations, for our children and our grandchildren. And he very much wants to do that and wants to include everybody.
Yeah. What's something that you've obviously come up to the Yidinji Territory? You've met with the Attorney General and in an official capacity as well. So this is the very beginning of creating that legal identity the Waka Waka Nation has every right to do, but also now exercising that. What are the next steps for your government that can be quite exciting? I think from your point of view, from our point of view.
Well, we're still in the formative stages, so I see that there's a lot of work of things to get in place to establish our ministry, to get all the groundwork in place with the notices and telling the world and all the things that I've learnt here from you, Murumu, really. But once that's all established, it's a big mission. I guess the bigger picture is we want to bring back everything to the original people as well as to all of the people in the nation in terms of their self-esteem, work opportunities, the culture, the sports. In Cherbourg, and I think probably other places have suffered this, they took away all the industries. They used to have forestry, they had cattle farms, they had beef industry, they had their own abattoirs. They had many industries, and they took all those jobs away from them and gave them the dole. And so we have to start winding that back, encouraging them to work, teaching them to help them discover their health. And I have to be careful here, because it's not about what I want for them, it's what they want for their people and what we want for all the people.
And so, I think they're shared visions. I mean, you wouldn't necessarily... people wouldn't find things like that disagreeable, maybe in some areas, on how to do it, how to achieve these things. But, that's what governments are there for, or the governing bodies, is to assist families, to assist clan groups, and to really take charge of that, but show that, prior to the British coming here, there was a very, very solid system in place, and it's really trying to modernise that with what we're doing here for the government, for example, and codifying those things so the rest of the world can actually say, oh, this is their pieces of paper and their written laws, their coat of arms, their identities, and which are all different, because Waka Waka and Yidinji aren't the same. We wouldn't say that the French or English are the same, because if you did that, I mean, they've been fighting since day dot on all those levels. But, it's just the world is just starting to realise that Australia is not one country. It's the continent is home to many different tribal groups and nations, and now they're starting to form their own government structures and authorities.
And I also like what you said about It's normal to expect that we will have to redo things, that we won't always get it right the first time, but we will continue to experiment and change as we feel it's necessary. It doesn't matter how many times. It only matters how many times that you keep going out to bat, that you keep doing it and experimenting it and moving forward. And listening is a huge thing. And that's a skill I think that the original people have that we don't have so well. So I like the idea of sitting in a yarning circle and just talking through issues and to come to the right or the best solution. Yeah,
it's wonderful. You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today, thanks to the Yidinji Broadcast Service. If you're listening to this inside of Australia, that is the Commonwealth, it's via the National Indigenous Radio Service. And a big hello to our friends at Bumabipra Media 98.7 FM for carrying this. And thank you for you, wherever you are listening, because we're using your spectrum and with permission and respect, we want to bring you information and share that. Irrigala Rudraj is the Minister for Law from the Waka Waka Nation. She's our guest today. She's been a guest for nearly a week now. And you actually went and saw the release of the very first Indigenous-made launched Yidinji operating system, a computer operating system called Jubilite. Getting used to these new technologies and developing technologies have been wonderful. But what were your thoughts on it?
Oh, look, I think it's so exciting on a number of levels. Firstly, to see it's the results, actually, of seeing the foundations that Yidinji have made in all areas. So they're now in a position with an established Chamber of Commerce that has a product release that is a joint venture between the technical company Cyberzen and Yidinji. And so that's great. The second thing about it is wonderful is that it's a product that will be marketed globally, that will have attraction all over the world, and I can't even do it justice. The product is amazing. It's a walking operating system that you can hold in the palm of your hand, and it's the most powerful, most amazing system that you can ever imagine. And it's the way software should have always been developed, where we, the citizens, are protected and we have control over our privacy and the safety of our data.
Yes, and it's one of the things that are very much in line with, if we can describe it as a Yidinji philosophy or a way of life.
Yep.
Here. But at the same time, it's now whatever is ours, we offer it to our friends, and the Waka Waka are certainly friends of ours, as are many other different nations. We often say that we are a friend to many and an enemy to none here on the Yidinji territory. Irrigala, I was just wondering about the journey as I say to people, you know, if Captain Cook was to come past today and walk past this very office, it would be so familiar to him, the coat of arms, the stamps, the seals. It's something that wasn't here back then. He just couldn't see the law. Because he was here as an officer of the British Crown. The same thing if he came to what we would call Cherbourg, which is obviously a French name, after a French town, but the original description would be different. If he went there today, the same thing. You guys are setting up your governments, your seals. I've seen the concept artworks and all those things. This is something that is available to every tribe around the world now that truly wants to take charge and over their own matters and their own house. It's a wonderful thing. It's very, very liberating, even just talking about it.
It is, and I think it's if you go back in time, as you say, the law and the customs were there, but with their British eyes they could not see it because they're looking for certain things that we now know as the insignia of a nation to the British. And so now we're producing these nations and putting all those pieces together. But really we're just we're reclaiming what was already there. And we're fortunate in Australia that our original people have never ceded their rights to the land. There's never been any treaty. So they are first in time, best in law. and they are the people who deserve and have the right value system, I think, to be trusted with looking after the land, taking care of the land, the air and the water for all of us, for now, the benefit of the future.
Oh, sorry about that. You've mentioned Cherbourg, so yes. You've given us an idea where this is. Okay. Is it the Burnett Downs area, isn't it? If you give us a proper description of that.
So the Wakka Wakka territory covers what's called the North Burnett and South Burnett, and it goes across to the coast for the most part. So the coast you'd be familiar with from north of the Brisbane River up through the Sunshine Coast for the most part, and then across to the west to places like Idesfield and down to Dalby and Bella included. So there's a lot of territory there, a few mines, beautiful country. Most well known for the bunya tree and the bunya nut, which is really important to the original people because it sheltered them and fed them, and they would gather there each year for tribal marriages and whatever they traded. Very important for them and for all of us. And I think there's so much for all of us to learn. It's taken us 230 years to even start talking together. So we've made a huge step, really, in terms, when you think about it, that we are now actually working together to make this happen and respecting their wishes and doing things that, the way that suits their custom.
Now, I'm going to be asking you to be a little bit selfish in terms of... you don't have to have your Wakka Wakka hat on, but, I mean, obviously you're involved with Wakka Wakka. But let's fast forward the clock, let's say 10 years. What would you like to see as a result of the work that the elders and the Wakka Wakka government ministers are doing?
Oh, my gosh. I would like to see people living together in very happily and harmoniously in very productive communities. So I think that's going to mean a move away from big centralised government and control back to community, and community in terms of, you know, some of us are old enough to remember the days when there were farming co-ops, and so the food was grown or slaughtered or whatever by the local farmers and sold locally to the people, and that would all be productive. Plus, like you've done, come up with this amazing product that is highly technical. Who knows what we'll come up with? Because there are many, many people in that make up the community who are far more creative than I am. So I can't even imagine some of it. But really, I'm working towards let's have happy, harmonious, healthy communities of people working together and helping each other. It's my vision.
Yeah, that's exactly a wonderful projection and picture there. And listen, I think it's going to be exciting to see how your government is going to flourish and how it'll make decisions on key things. I mean, there's lots of obviously a responsibility in terms of home affairs and borders and the treaty with Australia or a UN member state or whoever it may be, but down to the to what the local dollars would be named. These are the intriguing things that we're certainly looking forward to hear about in the future.
I'm hoping, I have this, just a bit of a joke really, that we could call it the Wakka Dollar. But I don't have permission from my elders from that yet, so that's just my idea. There was something else I was thinking of while you were saying that.
About designing, obviously being across board, treaties, not only with Australia, I guess, if that's a priority.
Yes, I see that as a very high priority. We've forged this relationship, for which I'm very grateful, with the Yindingi Nation. And so not only do I see these harmonious communities, but I also see us as being harmonious nations helping each other and helping the other nations, supporting them where they can, and them supporting us where we need it. And then from that we will then build treaties with international countries that have our same view for peaceful coexistence, because that's what we want for us and for the world.
And I'm not going to mention your age, but I know that I can let viewers know that, listeners rather, that you have experience, and you would have seen the world change quite a bit. And there is hope in what we're doing now, in that it only takes a few people to really start kicking things along.
Well, in fact, that's the only thing that ever does change the world, is a few people. It only takes a few people to have the courage and the commitment and the drive. As long as we're on God's side, and I believe that we are. And so I've had many, many examples of that where, because my passion is very strong, whenever I go and talk to people, the one thing they're blown away by is my passion for what I'm doing. And I know that that's in harmony with what God wants, with love and truth. And people get on board with that, and so that's how the movement will grow. So, yes, it doesn't take a lot of people, it just takes the right people. And there is often there's often some criticism about the original people, whether they have the skills and ability and et cetera, and the intellect to do this. And you know what I say? It does not take a big intellect to know right from wrong. And my brothers and sisters that I've met in these nations have a very strong sense of what's right and what's wrong, far better than we do. Like, I think their highest values are protect the land, the air and the water, look after the younger generation. They know who their mob is and they know how to look after community, and they're the things that we need to value above all else. So if we can tick those boxes, everything else will be fine, I reckon.
Well, Irrigala, thank you so much for visiting the Yidinji territory. We appreciate your friendship, and we know that you've got a lot of work to do, and you'll always be welcome here. And some final words before you head off.
Yeah. I'd like to say this ode for peace that we have, and that is for all of us. United we stand, divided we fall. Natural rights are for one and all, as you honour mine and I honour yours, to protect the land, the air and the water. We come together, all tribes and cultures, and we speak with one voice. Peace is our future.
And that was Irrigala Rajraj there, the Minister-at-Law, or the Attorney-General, I guess you could say, of the Waka Waka Nation. And it's great to see them starting their journey. Recently, I travelled to the Birriggubba Territory, and we conducted our first ever trade mission quite successfully. It was very exciting. But Ganyara, some final comments today. Obviously, it was Mabo Day this week as well. And a big respect to the Mabo family and all the hard work that everyone's doing. Because, I mean, you know, Yidinji wouldn't be in a position where it is today if it wasn't for everyone. And I mean everyone on this continent that has pushed for their rights, whether it's in Australia or not. It has come to help us define and pursue this particular intention and aspiration of self-determination.
Yeah, look, it's bigger than just Yidinji. This has been hundreds of years, by the way, of the Aboriginal people pushing back against the settler state, the one that's moved into their house. And they're just pushing back and they're trying to feel their way forward. And they've been kept purposely down and uneducated so they don't find the way forward, you know. So it's good to see the likes of, like you just mentioned, Mabo. It's good to see that got to the High Court. And what was said in that document, by the way, the decision, Mabo 2 decision, that was a very interesting thing, because it made the High Court reject the doctrine of terra nullius. You know, well, there was someone here. So that's an admission, you know. They're slowly bringing the truth out, but they're not bringing the whole truth out. They didn't tell Eddie that, oh, you're Koiki, you own the place under that law. You know, they sort of hinted at things. And, you know, it's just that everyone's pushing forward together. It's just coming in from everywhere, not just here. But Yidinji's trying to push away forward, and, you know, we've taken some knocks, and like everything, it's all taken time. We hope we can expedite it for the other mobs, you know, to accelerate it so that they can follow in the footsteps. And it's about the assertion of sovereignty. Like this bloke in the forest down there in Tasmania, understanding that he's got to assert who he is, his sovereignty, assert the mobs against the colonial manifestation, against the colonial court, you know. It's good to see that happen. But we need to get the word out there, and we need to get mob to stand up together and to unify and to not fight amongst themselves, to not go down the what the West want. They want you drunk on drugs. They want you just to go and lay down and die. So like Yidinji is pushing all his youngsters, don't drink, don't smoke, don't use drugs, and hopefully you get the clarity of mind so you can see your way forward to the thing that's oppressing you the most.
Yes, and for those who don't know, the Yidinji Nation has launched its own computer operating system. It's the first of its kind in the world. It's made here on the Yidinji territory. It's called Jubu Leet. Jubu means walking stick, because the operating system runs off a USB. So you just put it in your pocket and up and go. It was great to see that launch, and we'll have more information over the next couple of weeks with some of the people behind it. But one of them was a 12-year-old young fella, who helped build one of the machines that will end up printing the USBs or sanitising them. And that was really good, because he built it from scratch. And that's the type of thing, I think, that really needs to take place now. All the young people coming through, or the next to be elders, for example. And, you know, there's people doing a lot of cultural stuff out there, really good stuff with the Yidinji flavour. And, you know, this is the type of thing that really needs to come to fruition. People getting Yidinji digital IDs, but now Birigaba is starting to issue digital IDs, and there will be, through our trade mission, there will be a cross-border payment through our digital currencies. And that's an amazing thing. If you, even like a few years ago, we were wondering how this is all going to work, because you got to print your own money and do all this kind of stuff, and there's all security around it, and how can you print it? It's going to cost millions of dollars to print it all. But, Ganyara, it's happened right before our own eyes in a way that we really didn't expect it.
Oh, absolutely. So that's why I never give up. Never give up. And that's the hard part. You know, over the decades, it's been a long, hard slog. It really has. And you sort of got to wonder, where do we end up? This is where we're ending up, by stepping up to the plate and taking the challenges head on. And this is what all the Aboriginal nations must do, you know, is to say, look, nothing's impossible. We can do anything. Like the young fellow making that, we can do anything. It's up to us. We're only limited by our own imagination. So we've got to step up to the plate. We take charge of our own affairs. We start to govern, and we do it properly to ensure that some form of agreement is put in place to allow the settlers on our country to be part of the society as well, you know, to let them have a treaty to be on our territory. You know, as one young fellow was saying the other day there about the introduction to country ceremony instead of the welcome to country ceremony. That's a big, big change. That's an innovation, in my opinion. What he said there was so true and correct, is to introduce them to the Yidinji way, an introduction to country, to not say you're welcome 100%. If you're going to come and rape, pillage and plunder, you know, you may not be welcome, but you're getting an introduction to our view of the world, which is very important from that bloke there now.
Yes, that's it for today's program. Thank you so much for travelling all the way down again, Attorney General. And Gaibara Galanyunda, may God's peace be upon you wherever you are listening to this show. In the almighty name of Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus Christ, our Lord. Jesus simply means God saves, so Gaibara saves. If that's the one that you believe in, that created the whole heavens and the earth, and we believe that Gaibara came down in the form of man, died on the cross for the sins of the world, and he's coming back. And 3 days later, he was risen from the dead. And that's a historical fact, by the way, the story of Yeshua. But anyway, if you want more information about our government, then go to www.yidinji.org, and we'll catch you next week. Garu.
know I don't have much to show for myself yet, but don't judge me, cause I live my life ruggedly. My skills and ability comes to me naturally for me to release my lyrics swiftly with the wind blow. So slick, quick, wickedly it flows, smooth as I cruise, running like a spin rim with my roll up by haircut trim. Now I ain't trying to pretend or act like anybody else, this is all me for real. So deal with it if you don't like the way you live it. Step aside, let me drive my life, and if I might make a mistake,